Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm
Can you
doing
hear me?
good. Yeah. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
I had a delayed pause there, so I was wondering.
Yeah, that might have been a natural pause on my part.
A natural pause.
Delayed reaction.
Yeah, how are you doing? Is weather nice out there, or is it crappy?
It's actually our weather's been up and down and all over the place lately. Today is going to be a bit warm for beginning of March. The next couple of days are going to be breaking records, apparently. It's going to be like around 70 the next couple of days,
Yeah.
which is crazy. So today's going to be a bit overcast and rainy, I guess, but the next couple of days are supposed to be pretty nice.
Cool.
So, yeah,
It's
kind of
getting to be
cool.
spring.
Yeah, we usually don't see 70s until probably May. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah, we were in our 60s yesterday, so that was very unusual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long have you been back from vacation?
A week.
A week now?
No, 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yeah.
Is that a bit of an adjustment coming back to colder weather?
Not too bad.
Yeah.
I don't think I was there long enough to acclimate.
And how long were you guys there?
Just a week.
Yeah.
It's like 7 days.
It was nice there when you were there, though.
Yeah, it
Hopefully.
was very nice. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
That was a good trip.
Was that just basically just somewhere that you guys wanted to go? Was there anything besides that as far as motivation or?
Mostly Barb wanted to go there.
Yeah.
I was just along for the ride,
It was.
but I enjoyed myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that she was wanting to do. That's cool. Yeah, I've never. How long of a flight was that for you?
It was 8 hours there and 5.5 back
Wow.
because of a tailwind.
Yeah.
So in one way you're going into the wind, which makes the flight way longer, and then the other way you have the wind, so you're almost going at the speed of sound.
Yeah, it's a pretty significant difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been to Hawaii. It's farther for us. We have to go across the whole country first.
Yeah.
And you're a little closer to that side. But I wouldn't mind going someday.
Yeah, you'd enjoy it. It's quite nice on Maui anyway. We didn't go anywhere else. We stayed on Maui.
Yeah, I saw you drove past some of the neighborhoods that were affected by the fires.
Yeah.
that's pretty
It was
rough.
pretty rough. We
Long has it
drove
been
through
though?
there. We drove, I don't, it's been a, it still happened in 2023, right? So I
Yeah.
think it happened in 2023, but
Look it up.
it's a lot of it's still untouched. Like it's just burned to the ground.
Yeah, the
Like
beginning
there's
of.
nothing there but foundation.
Yeah.
And they
Yeah, it was
haven't
only the
started
beginning of
rebuilding yet.
August.
They're rebuilding in places that didn't have anything on it, but they're not rebuilding in the places that were burned that I can see.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so like about 7 months ago. So yeah, it hasn't been that long.
Yeah, we did the whale watching, we did the road to Hana, which is like a winding road to a small town, and then you go to a black sand beach there, And then you get to see like sea turtles and all kinds of stuff and surfers. And we spent a lot of time on the beach and did the luau thing. So
Yeah,
yeah,
I thought you
it
got
was a
laid.
nice trip. You would like it. There was no rush. Like we were lackadaisical almost the whole time.
Yeah, that's what we tend to take relaxed vacations.
Yeah. We saw a lot of whales there, but from what I understand, their migration path might change away from Maui because of the global warming. The waters are just too warm.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 'cause they go to Alaska to Maui to have little babies and then they go back to Alaska.
Oh, okay.
Well, we saw quite a few. Some on the whale watching boat, and then some just from our hotel room, but farther away, like you could see them come out of the water or their spout or things like that.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah, it's kind of crazy how much global warming is affecting things, how many different things it's changing about the world.
Yeah, like the. I heard it's affecting the. I don't know if it's the Alaskan king crab or if it was a lobster. I don't remember. But it's affecting one of them because their food source is going away. So that affects them.
Yeah, a lot of things in the natural world, just a lot of different animals and things like that being impacted for sure. Yeah, that's rough, but I'm glad you guys had a good time.
Yeah, it was a good time, and then came back to busy work, which I wasn't ready for, but survived.
Yeah,
And I
did
don't
you
think we
go
got
right
a
back?
vacation planned until April, but it's not really a vacation. It's more like a go back home for a couple of days.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah. Did you go right? Did you have any kind of time between, or did you go really
I had
right
one
back into
day.
work?
Yeah.
Yeah, I usually find it's like helpful to kind of have a little buffer. If possible,
Yeah,
the longer the
refreshing
vacation,
day.
the more necessary it feels.
I wasn't totally relaxed on my relaxed day, but because they called me from work, so I did work like 2.5 hours on the phone with people, but I didn't have that planned. So they kind of like spun me up before I wanted to be spun up.
Like they knew you were back in town.
Yeah.
We can call them. Yeah.
They didn't know I was back in town. They just
I did.
called.
Oh, just coincidentally. Well, I guess that's better than them calling you while you're in Hawaii.
Yeah, that's
Could
true. Like could have been much worse.
have been worse.
Yeah. So what have you been doing? Mostly the movies still, or are you getting into comics again, or or video games? What's floating your boat?
Free time, mostly still gaming. I read
On what
comics.
platform?
A mix. A little bit, mostly PlayStation or Nintendo. One of those two. I don't really do PC gaming 'cause I work on a PC.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to be in that same posture, that same location or position or whatever.
Yeah.
In my free time, so it's cool some of the big PC setups that people have nowadays and everything like that, but it's also more expensive too.
But do you play in single mode or net over the network?
I mean everything's connected nowadays, but I am mostly a mostly into solo gaming. Like, I don't get too much into,
Social gaming.
yeah, the multiplayer gamings. And for the most part, with occasional exception, but I don't, like, there's some popular new games. I hear about it because I read about gaming news and that kind of thing, but I don't tend to get into that stuff so much. I like to play games with a good story and single player mostly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hadn't I went ahead and read Comic Store today though, because I hadn't really watched any older movies recently, so I
Newer movies or what?
What have we watched? Most recently we rewatched, well, it was a first for me. My wife had watched it, the Chernobyl miniseries on HBO.
Yeah.
And she had watched it when it was new and offered to re or said she was interested in rewatching it, and I she said thought I would really like it, so we watched that. That was really good. I've been slowly watching an animated series on Netflix called Blue Eye Samurai.
Yeah.
That's got really good reviews and stuff. I think I'm like halfway or maybe a little more than halfway through that. And it's actually really, really well written. Interesting story.
My recorder crashed, so is yours recording?
I think so. I didn't get any crashes or anything like that.
That's weird. I
Should
never
be.
had that happen before. I usually test before to
Yeah,
make sure
it's
it's recording and
been kind of my habit. I still load up MP3 Skype recorder before I load up Skype, so
okay, should I
thankfully I.
recall when it establishes, or do you want me to just go off of yours?
Whatever's easier for you. So far, mine's going okay. If you want to start yours up just as a
I started it up, but
backup or something, but
mine doesn't always like connect with when I'm live.
yeah.
I have to like re-register it kind of thing with Skype.
Gotcha. Yeah, whatever works out, I'll send you mine and you can
Okay,
figure out what you want to
that'll
do.
work as
Yeah.
long as yours is going. I
But,
knew I was sort of in trouble because for some reason my machine is running really high on disk, and I don't understand why, but it is. Like disk
Yeah.
usage, like the CPU and the memory are fine, but it's like my antivirus is just going to town for whatever reason.
Yeah,
But
not long.
I have an old computer though. It's time to upgrade. This
Yeah,
has been a
mine's not
workhorse.
super old, but I not long ago I decided to do a restore. Like on Windows, you can do a fresh installation and still keep all your personal files.
Yeah.
And I was gonna finagle with it and try to figure out what was slowing down, and I just was like, I think it'll just be faster just to do this instead of trying to figure it out. So I just went ahead and did that. I had to like reinstall some programs, but it really didn't take too long to. And it's like, most stuff I have to go ahead and reinstall right away. It's like, well, if I did like Skype and stuff like that, if I can't remember, maybe it was already installed, but it's like other stuff. I'm like, well, yeah, if I decide I want to use that or need that program or something, I can just go ahead and install it at that point. But yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I think I was talking. Yeah. So we were watching TV, and then I think I'm just looking at movies we watched recently were kind of newer. We watched The Holdovers.
That was
That was
good.
good. Yeah, we liked that. Which was just from last year, so. Yeah, so I read some comics for today. It's just kind of my ticket to talk to you.
Well, I did the opposite. I watched some movies. I have a
Oh,
couple
okay.
comics, but yeah.
Interesting. Were you mostly reading new stuff lately? Because I know you're still reading comics.
I'm reading a lot of new stuff. There's
Yeah.
been a lot of good stuff happening in comics lately. Like it seems to be on the upturn for sure.
Just as like what the established publishers are putting out, or are there new people
Yeah,
putting stuff out, or?
established publishers doing a really good job. Marvel and DC specifically, and Valiant has come back in force,
Oh
so
yeah, are
I'm
they
pretty
putting
happy.
more stuff out now, or?
Yeah, and the old stuff, like they're collecting a lot of the old material. They're putting out a lot of material now that they have a new publisher. There's Valiant is
Oh, they do.
still being run by Valiant, but they have a new publisher called Alien Books that publishes them, and they seem to be publishing a lot of material, like omnibus size books and thick trades and all kinds of stuff. Plus, they were at like one book a month, and now they're going to like 4 books a month. So it's definitely on the uptick. I was just reading Dynamite, the James Bond, because I've been on a James Bond kick, and that was really good.
Yeah, I did see some of your posts about some Marvel and DC stuff. Or maybe, no, actually, maybe there was a Marvel thing, but I think it was actually like Image stuff, like the G.I. Joe stuff that you
Oh yeah,
were
G.I.
liking.
Joe's been amazing. Like the regular series I like the most, the Larry Hama stuff, just because it's classic formula. Like
Yeah.
it just has so many plot threads. But the Cobra Commander and Duke series, they're really good. They're written really well. And they take place in like the Energon universe, so there's a lot of things going on with the other books, Transformers and Void Rivals. It's like a lot of universe things. Like there's the Ghost Machine that's starting up by Geoff Johns, like his machine, his continuity line. And
Is that
there's
something
the
he's doing
Energon.
within DC, or
Oh no, that's Image.
that's
It's
Image?
its own
Okay.
company. That's the name of the company, Ghost Machine. It's this
Okay.
sub imprint underneath Image. You know how like
Yeah, right.
most of the big wigs have their own publishing
Yeah,
studios?
like Skybound or
Yeah.
stuff like that. Okay, that's cool. Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't kept up on comic news.
Yeah, there's been a lot happening, and they're like one of the big things they're doing is Marvel's been reprinting like ROM and things they didn't have that you thought you'd never see.
Yeah,
Godzilla,
I did remember seeing news about that.
Micronauts, and then they're going to be doing with DC, they're going to reprint the Marvel DC team-up books. Like the
Oh.
Spider-Man, Superman, and all that stuff in an omnibus. And they're also doing the amalgam again, like an amalgam omnibus.
Oh, wow.
So,
Are
yeah,
they gonna
there's.
do JLA Adventures?
Yeah, that's the only one they're not including because they just did that one.
Oh, did they do that?
Well, they did it as a earn money for George thing, I think.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So I know for a long time that was something I had, like my individual copies of that, because I was like, I gotta hang on to these because I don't know if they're gonna reprint these.
Right.
But Yeah, that's cool. I mean, the industry, it's weird because like the industry is so small, but the companies that own the big publishers are big. So like they typically don't collaborate, but like comics is a place where like they can probably stand to collaborate. They
Well,
probably
the
have the
market
room.
hasn't been doing very well. Like, there's a lot of store closures, and
Yeah.
it's on the, while it was doing good during COVID, it's like on the downturn.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of material, it's on the upturn. There's a lot of interesting things that are coming up. And I rotate, like I'll spend like 1 week reading a lot of independent stuff, and then 1 week reading Marvel, and then the other one reading DC, or sometimes just DC Marvel. So I like rotate to keep my interest.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I do like some coincidental things. Like I just got caught up on Action Comics, which was the end of Philip Kennedy Johnson's run and the beginning of Jason Aaron's. And just coincidentally, I was watching Bond films, which made me read Bond comics, and Philip Kennedy Johnson was coincidentally writing James Bond. So sometimes there's things like that that I don't intend, but it crosses over to the writer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I actually we're seeing that in video games as well, where there was like a huge boom in the pandemic and companies, it's like ongoing. I think it's the tech world in general, and video games are a part of that, but it's just like last year was awful with layoffs, companies,
Yeah.
and like it's continuing into this year apparently. Real bad in that regard.
Yeah, I don't keep up with gaming at all, but I was aware of the layoffs 'cause some of the podcasts I listen to, the co-hosts are gamers, so I know a little bit. I knew a little bit about the layoffs and stuff like that. And I knew like Harry Potter game did really well, whereas the Suicide Squad game out the gate kind of sucked really bad. Didn't
Yeah.
meet expectations. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
that was an
I
interesting
hear about
phenomenon.
them. Yeah.
'Cause there was like a big push for like multiplayer live service ongoing games for a
Yeah.
while there, and the company that made the Suicide Squad game was the company that made a bunch of Batman games.
Yeah, the Arkham
Yeah,
stuff,
the
or
Arkham series that were single player Batman games that people really loved, and I played a couple of them, and they really did like capture the feel of Batman in a really cool way. Just all the aspects of him, from like fighting to investigating, like they really got the detective aspect of it and stuff. It was really cool. And those were like single player games, and I think they were kind of like pushed to make a multiplayer game, and it's kind of weird because like all the characters are using guns regardless of whether it like really makes sense for them, so you have like Killer Shark using guns and
Yeah, that's what
like
I heard. I heard plot-wise, like the characters weren't even, it's like they didn't even read a Suicide Squad book other than take them in. And I understood they didn't like the demise of the Justice League or the way they were taken out, I guess. But I think gameplay is gameplay. Like it probably just doesn't play well. Like I
Yeah.
heard they had like bugs out the gate too, so
Yeah, that can hurt
that could
things.
hurt things bad.
Yep. I think it's a weird time for the game industry 'cause like video games haven't increased in price in forever. Like they've almost never. I mean, recently they did raise prices on a lot of games, come out at like 70 instead of 60, which
Yeah.
is what they were at for a long time. But it's like kind of an interesting parallel to comics. Like you hit this like barrier where like consumers refuse to pay more for stuff, but everything else in the world is increasing in price, including the cost that it takes to make the stuff.
Sure, you got to
And
pay your developers and sometimes pay your marketing and more
yeah.
than, I mean, they expect raises just like anybody else.
Yeah, and
So
e-comics, like you
your
gotta like
cost is going to go up somehow.
if you want to attract like good writers and artists and stuff like that, they need to make, they need to make a living wage and stuff off of their contributions and stuff. And it's like people kind of like with comics, like people don't want to pay more, but they gotta find the money somehow. So then they introduce like other ways of making that money, like microtransactions and subscriptions and collector's editions and early access, and then people bitch and complain about that stuff too, and like they don't like that stuff either. So it's just like it's like kind of this crisis point where it's like, okay, we can't make the games that people want at the price that they want them at, so what are we gonna do? And I think they're still trying to figure out the answer to
Yeah. They don't sell
that. It's
like
interesting.
traditional cartridges or CDs anymore, do they? It's all online, right? You download the game.
It's not quite there yet. I think that is part of the picture too. Like, I think the companies really want it to be digital. They've wanted everything to be digital for a long time, and they give you like some companies give you incentives to buy things online, but like that's another entrenchment point, and that's kind of another similarity to comics where you have a lot of consumers who really want to hold on to the physical. Even though, like, it's in a lot of cases, the disc just installs onto your system and, like, it's installed to your hard drive and it's just checking to see that the disc's in the system if before you play it, It's
Yeah.
not actually reading anything off the disc, but, like,
It's kind of a licensing thing. Like
yeah, but
you got the game.
right. But consumers still like it because, there's people who are into collecting games, and then there are also people who like to play a game and then sell it, when they're done with it, or to
Yeah.
buy used games cheaper, and that's another reason they want to get rid of physical games because they don't get any money if someone buys a used game, So that's kind of another similarity or interesting parallel to comics.
Yeah, DVDs and Blu-rays and
And those
4Ks,
too, yeah.
same thing. They're going down, like Disney's not going to do it anymore. So Sony's picking it up, but what blows my mind is the sales are still highest at the DVD, you know? It's like 83%.
You mean like
And then
versus Blu-ray
market,
or?
yeah, versus Blu-ray and then 4K
Yeah.
is 1%. So it's just like they make less of the Blu-ray, but they do it because they sell less. So
Yeah.
the market for it is that, like there's fans that are totally into the 4K, but they just don't have the masses to do it. The
Yeah,
demand
it's
isn't there, so it's like, and then most companies now just want to lay into the streaming, like Disney. I'll
Yeah.
just stream everything, and I'm okay with it. Like I've detached from physical media on the DVD front. Like I'm totally like I use tools like Just Watch or like I'm into the Bond films now, or sometimes I use their algorithms. Like I was watching like stalker hunting films, like where people get stalked or hunted, and then it just suggests another film to me. So like I'll go down this road and write it as long as I have interest, and it'll take me like six films in or seven films, and then I need to switch it up a little bit. And then now I'm into the James Bond, and I've never been into the James Bond. I was like, what the hell should I get into? Like sometimes I don't even know what I feel like watching, and I just picked View to a Kill just to watch it, and I was like, of all the Roger Moores that I've watched more Craig films in Bond, like, but I Roger Moore was more in my wheelhouse in terms of time frame. Like, I knew about him pop culture wise, but I never watched too many things. Like, I saw Octopussy, I think, and that was it. But I knew about Roger Moore. So I was like, I want to watch these. And I was like, these are really good. So that's what I'm talking about. I watched a couple. I watched View to a Kill. I watched a couple of, I wanted to watch like all the Roger Moore movies after I saw View to the Kill, but then I realized they're not all streaming for whatever reason. So like I could choose to rent them or buy them digitally or just wait. And the way I did the Charles Bronson films is I just waited because they rotate in and out of stations like all the time. And sometimes you just have to have patience and just say, hey, I'm interested in watching this. Can you flag it or bookmark it in case it ever shows up again? And I keep an eye on it from time to time. So I was tempted just to get the DVDs, like give me the whole Bond collection minus the Spectre, because they had the 50-year DVD. And Barb's like, well, what are you, how long is that going to sit there? And she's, I was like, oh, she's probably right. So, I do like it on to have it digitally because I could watch it on my iPad. I could watch it on any TV, like I have the service. So that's my favorite platform to watch it because of usability. And I should say the same thing about comics. But I have the same, like you were talking about gaming on the PC. I have the same thing. Like, I associate screens with work. And I don't necessarily want to read it on there, even though I'm fine with it. Like, I'm getting more used to it. Like, some of the books I'm talking about today, they were digital reads just because of convenience.
Yeah,
But
there's definitely a convenience factor for sure.
yeah, because it's like the middle of the night. I'm not going to go dig out through long boxes. And I have sporadic sleeping schedule, like where sometimes I go to bed really early and then I can't sleep like in the middle of the night. And I'll just read some books and then go back to bed. But yeah.
And it can be nice to have more options at your fingertips, like you don't have to like you could go somewhere with your iPad that's a little lighter than having like a backpack stuffed with, like 100 comic books because you're
Right.
not sure what you want to read, so you're like, I'm gonna break my back.
And sometimes I even find myself reading like new stuff digitally because I have the physical copy, but like I'm in bed and it's the middle of the night and I can pull up the DC app and read, catch up on something instead of going downstairs and opening up the book. But yeah, so it works out well. And then on travel, like when you're traveling, I'm totally 100% digital. I don't take stuff with me. I'll take like one contingency trade paperback or something like that and read it if I run into like I need something to read and I don't have my digital stuff. But for the most part, I just go digital. I should go, but I still love the physical media. I just choose to do the one thing that I love the most in physical media. I used to do all of it, like toys and games and everything was physical. And now I just said, oh man, I gotta cut it down to one hobby and let it be comics.
I mean, yeah, there are some, nice things about, just having something physical to hold. That's not, not like a iPad or something, like some kind of technology.
True, because you
Just
become like just this week in our neighborhood, the Ring app was saying everybody was complaining because they're like, our CenturyLink, or I can't remember, is the cable service, Xfinity was down all week, like for 2 days, and people were just complaining in the neighborhood, like, can you get to anything yet? You know, they can't stream anything unless they go to their phone and use 5G or 4G. But you know, they had nothing.
Yeah.
So like if you totally rely on the streaming, then you're in bad shape. Or you know, whereas if you have some physical media, you could pop in your. We have backup plans. Like we lost one of the DirecTV satellites went down, and for a whole day, we had no like. There was like maybe 100 channels affected. We had some, but not all of it because of that one satellite going down. But it's interesting with DirecTV because DirecTV senses, you know, I can't pick you up on the satellite, but you have I know you have internet and I can stream it to you. So like for some of the stations that are hooked up like that, it just automatically click the OK button and they'll start streaming it. So yeah, in cases like that, you have a backup plan. Plus, for local stations, we now have some, you know, local antennas, so we can go that route.
Yeah.
I've been watching a lot of TV, more so than reading, which is unusual, but there's been a lot of stuff. Like we're watching Bass Reeves, which is based on a true story. You probably heard of Bass Reeves, but they have a show about it now.
I feel like I have, but I can't think of what that is right.
He's a marshal, a black marshal that actually was. He became a marshal shortly after the Civil War. Because he was sort of in the right place at the right time, and somebody knew he was good with guns. Like, you know, he was really good. So he became like a U.S. Marshal to go after people like bounties, like kind of like a bounty hunter, and bring them in. But he was one of the first black marshals that would go do that, and he became really popular because of he was very successful. And the reason I'm watching is because it's produced by Taylor Sheridan, and I love all of his shows. So that was one of his he just produced, but I still we still watched it.
Oh yeah, I think that's where I was looking into, 'cause we had like Paramount for free for a little
Yeah.
while, and I was looking into like the confusing nature of like what's like Taylor Sheridan's shows, like what's available where. 'Cause like the
Yeah, it's like
main
Mayor of
show.
Kingstown, the Tulsa King, Yellowstone, the 1883, I can't remember the dates.
Yeah.
And then one that was earlier than that, one was a Western and then one took place shortly after World War One. That one hasn't seen a second season though yet. I'm still waiting for that one, but I really like Taylor Sheridan stuff. Like it, I like flock to. He's like one of those person that puts like complex plot threads in there that drive you to want to find out what all these threads, you know, like how these threads are leading to things. So it's very addictive. And then we're watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is like. Curb has really gotten, with time, it's gotten better and better, especially with the introduction of Leon. But that show's just amazing. It's entering its final season, so we've been rewatching it. Richard Lewis just passed away, and he's on that show quite a bit.
Yeah, I saw that he passed away. That's sad.
Yeah.
And I noticed I've never watched Curb, but I did see an advertisement for that it was the last season. I think when we
Yeah.
were watching, 'cause we watched this most recent this season of True Detective. And though it has ads for the other HBO shows before it starts.
Yeah. It's really good, especially if you like Seinfeld. It kind of hits that itch, you know?
Yeah,
Yeah.
I figured. Yeah, the thing I was mentioning was like Yellowstone was like the initial show in that series, right? Like,
Yeah.
and it's like it's not streaming on Paramount because like when they, I guess, has something to do with when it first they gave the rights to the
Peacock,
streaming.
NBC, yeah.
Yeah, to like, because they didn't know how popular it was going to be or something like that. And so like that's the, like that's not on Peacock, but all the like spin-off shows are on Peacock. And I was like, well, I kind of want to watch the original.
But you could watch them in time order. That's interesting, though.
Yeah, I did see
You
that.
could watch them like the Western's amazing, all told through like a, I would say a 18-year-old, 19-year-old girl's perspective, as going on a wagon train. And then the next one is sort of the wagon train gets to Yellowstone, you know, where the Duttons live. And that it's established in that Western one. And then the next one takes off with Harrison Ford as a relative of the Duttons. And that's after World War II. And one of their sons has to come back from fighting to help the land. And then you got obviously the current one, which is the Kevin Costner. That one's having trouble because everybody wants more money because of the popularity. Kevin Costner, there's a lot of actor drama with that show right now. So I don't even know when it's coming back. But yeah, it's unusual because if you want to watch the current season, you watch it on Paramount Plus. But if you want to watch the old episodes going to it, you have to have Peacock.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, I mean we don't have either of those normally, and I think we just had Peacock for no, we had Paramount Plus for free for a little while, so it was like, oh yeah, isn't like aren't all those shows on there? And then that's how I learned about the whole situation. Ended up
Oh,
watching everything anyway, but
he has that military one too, Lioness. So, like Lioness, Tulsa King, and Mayor of Kingstown are not related to Yellowstone, but they're Taylor Sheridan things. Like I know
yeah.
Bomer just finished Lioness and he loved it, but I can't get him into the Yellowstone stuff to save my life.
Huh.
He just has like no interest.
Is it the country, the like country type
I don't know if
Western
it's
setting?
the land, like, 'cause Yellowstone is weird because they're not good people. Like,
Yeah.
they're when you look at it from a lot of perspectives, they're really no heroes. They're all greedy people. You have to get into it. You get into it, and you like start rooting for factions, but you're not rooting because there's a hero. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, it's unusual. And I don't know if he just doesn't want to see it because of the its land. Like I don't know if he has interest in land in Yellowstone or I don't know what it is, but I can't get him to watch it. He watches his own thing. Like we love Money Heist, but I to get him to finish Berlin is killing me. Like he just hasn't finished it yet.
Does he just
And
kind of take his
I like
time with stuff?
I don't know, 'cause he does the same thing I do. Like he watches the majority of his stuff when he's exercising. And he went on that like FX vampire show where we watch in the shadows, or I don't know what it's called. But he started to watch, go on that tangent and watched all of that. What's wrong? Oh, I'll get it. You put the time and then power. So you just hit that power level. Microwave. So what do you got, Chris?
Let's see. Speaking of the iPad, let me grab it and so this is all stuff. So I kind of went looking for stuff that I hadn't, that was considered to be good, and I hadn't read, maybe even hadn't really heard of, or just maybe if maybe in passing at some point forgot about or something. I was looking at a list of like good 80s and 90s comics for to help me do that, and then seeing if stuff was on Hoopla or not. And one thing I chose to check out was Enigma, and this is
That's Vertigo, right?
yeah, it was originally an I think 8-issue Vertigo miniseries. It was one of like the launch Vertigo books, and it's written by Peter Milligan, who I have heard of and read stuff by, but I hadn't heard of this or paid attention to this before. But it was looks like a few years ago. Karen Berger, who was the main Vertigo editor person, she has her own imprint under Dark Horse nowadays called Berger Books, and they got the rights to DC went ahead and let them publish Enigma under Berger Books, so it's like a definitive edition collection. The art is by a guy named Duncan Fegretto, who's also British, like Peter Milligan. I guess this was kind of an early work for him, one of his early projects. And it's kind of funny anecdote. There's like a 2-page introduction by Peter Milligan about the series and stuff, and he talked about how the artist, since it was like an early project for him, he feels like he improved over the 8 issues. Like you can see his art improve throughout the series. But like he was on stage at a comic convention at a panel, and they were asking him about the art in the series, and he just made up the story that it was like thematic. It was like a deliberate, he calls it a deliberate narrative device, that as like the main character became clearer about who they were and more confident who they were, the art was meant to reflect that by getting better. And then he was on a panel with the artist, and the artist repeated that same story. It's kind of like believed it himself, but
Interesting.
it's kind of funny. But yeah, I read the first issue, I do like the art. To keep speaking about the art front, I do like the art from the beginning. It is does have kind of a rough feel. I think he did most of it. As in not just the pencils. He's just listed as, yeah, it looks like he did everything but the color. Sherilyn Van Valkenburg is listed as the color artist, so he did the pencils and inks, and it has a very loose feel to it. Like he kind of just inked over his pencils without changing the nature of them too much. And there are like some moments here and there where it's a little confusing. But for the most part, so there's a character later on that I'll get to that's very like wild, conceptually. And so it the first couple appearances of him are a little Well, I'll talk about that more when I get to the character, getting ahead of myself here a little bit, but it's the main character is a guy named Michael Smith. Very average name, which might have been purposely chosen because he's meant to be kind of a very average person, who also has like a very specific routine. He wakes up on a Tuesday and he's gonna make love to his girlfriend later that day because it's Tuesday and that's what they do every Tuesday and only on Tuesday. He works for a phone company doing like house visits and stuff, helping people with like problems with their phone lines and stuff. And
I take it he has Tuesdays off.
no, just Tuesday evening after work
Okay.
activity. Looks like he is working on too, working that day though.
Does this take place in England or in America?
That's a good question. It isn't initially. Oh no, I'm sorry. It's no. It takes place in Arizona.
Okay.
I forgot. Yeah, from the very beginning, it's because there's like a little prologue, 2-page prologue on a farm in Arizona, 25 years prior to the story beginning, and a woman is chased out of a house by a man toward a well. And she's like, he's just wearing jeans and nothing else. And she tells him to stay away. And there's a close up of a red and green lizard on the edge of the well, before it picks up at the present day with Michael waking up, starting his day. And so he goes to some like eccentric, movie star's house that's having issues with his phone, and meanwhile, we have a scene that introduces that there's some sort of killer that they're calling a brain eater. There's a couple cops and looks like some kind of alleyway somewhere. A lot of blood, and this one of the cops finds a dead red lizard near the body and picks it up. The other cop's like, "What, what does that lizard have to do anything with anything?" It seems like this brain eater is like a serial killer that the public's aware of later on. There's like, in the background, there's a news report on the killings. And somehow they call it that because somehow the brain is being sucked out of the head. So we see a little bit more of, Michael's life that evening, him and his girlfriend and another couple are hanging out, and it's apparently like Michael's girlfriend has let slip that, Tuesday's their night, because the other couple jokes that they should get going, because Michael and his girlfriend want to be alone, and he's a little upset that she told them about Tuesdays, and we see that they're kind of laughing when they're leaving. Just overall kind of trying to paint a picture in these early scenes of what Michael's life is like, when the story starts. And we also introduce some kind of intriguing character we don't see directly. They seem to have long hair and they're in this sort of weird environment, with like broken glass on the ground. Looks like a really messy room. This one place, like the art's a little unclear. It almost looks like he's standing on the wall, which I think is actually intentional. Something weird going on with this character, but he picks up a mask from the floor. It's like a kind of like a Phantom of the Opera style mask. It just covers the top half of his face, or would cover a top half of somebody's face. But back to Michael, we see that even though it's Tuesday, he's not quite in the can't quite get in the mood. And he's really thinking about this brain eater killer and wondering, like, because one of the couples earlier makes a joke about Michael being kind of strange in his like habits and stuff, and like they jokingly compare him to like maybe the brain eater, someone like him, or and so he's like fixating on that, and what if the brain eater is somebody like me? And he gets up and gets out of bed and goes in the living room, puts on the TV to the news to see if they caught him yet. And this is where like the news report gives us some exposition, tells us that there's been 10 victims in 7 days and that they haven't found them. But there's also been reports that there's some kind of masked man that was seen at the latest scene. Michael's real worked up about this. Like, the latest victim was found outside of a nightclub that's only a couple blocks away from where they live. So he's like, he actually wants to go down there and see if he can see anything. And it's like 1 o'clock in the morning, so his girlfriend's like, "What the heck's going on with you?" And she's like, "Are you sure you're okay?" And he's like, "Yeah, why?" And she's like hesitating and looking down at his crotch, and he says, "You do seem a little excited." And so he's surprised by his erection as well. Something about this whole situation has got him excited where he wasn't, he was having trouble there earlier. But he convinces her to get dressed, and they go out to the scene, and they really can't really see anything. Obviously, at this point, it's all blockaded off by the police and stuff. We do see that there's that figure with the long hair and the half mask. There's some panels of kind of him in shadow, implying that he's maybe still nearby. And so Michael and his girlfriend actually end up having sex on the roof of his, or the, not roof, but the front. Why can't I think of the word? Not the trunk, the engine. The lid, what's the cover? What do you call the thing over top of the
The
engine? The hood. The
hood.
hood. The hood of the car.
That's a brain fart.
Yeah, exactly. I got attacked by the
When you
brain.
said engine, I'm like, does that mean they had propped open the hood?
Right.
So like they want to have sex on that lumpy ass heated engine or what?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I just couldn't think of the word. I got attacked by the brain eater, apparently. So yeah, it's just, so something's, with Michael, something's like stimulating about him about this whole situation. So we leave them there, we see that the cop, from earlier actually brought the dead red lizard with him, home. And, his, like, wife or girlfriend or whatever, she might be. I say that they seem to, maybe just for the sake of a scene transition, they seem to be just finished having sex. She's like grossed out by the fact that he brought this red lizard home, and he's teasing her with it and holding it near her face and stuff. But then she seems like more freaked out than she normally would be just from this lizard, and is looking past him. And he turns around and starts to swear, but then we flip the page and the scene changes, and it's actually the next day. It seems like it was already the next day in the previous scene from when we last saw Michael, because it's he's in his car and driving to work the next day, and there's a dent on the hood of his car. And he feels a little like morning after, kind of like creeped out a little bit about like his whole experience last night and how it overtook him. and he sees a green lizard flying through the air in this kind of like energy force. He's stuck in traffic and just gets out of his car and starts following this green lizard flying through the air. And we flip back to the cop, and we see that he's turned around, and it's this being that is whoever they have been calling the Brain Eater, but this being clarifies that their name is actually the Head, and they have like a human body, but they're true to their name, their Head. It's almost kind of hard to describe it. It kind of comes, their face kind of comes out long, like an anteater sort of, but not quite to that extent. It's, they've got an open, large open mouth that looks like it could suck the brain out of somebody. But then it's got this long, kind of, almost if like their spinal column is like extended by a couple of feet out, and then like this like dorsal kind of ridge, like this, like on a lizard actually, sort of. It's kind of hard to describe, but this is the character I was mentioning earlier. It takes a few panels to kind of, because it's like you don't have something in reality to reference to it, the nature of the art is such that it is very interesting conception visually, but it's kind of hard to process at first a little bit. But the Head attacks the cop, and we see an off-panel sound effect of slurp as the woman winces and closes her eyes. He seems like he actually uses some kind of device, like a large straw that hooks up to his mouth, actually. And he comments on how excellent the brain is, and it's the captions actually that inform us that when the Head eats a brain, he gets a concentrated experience of that person's entire life and memories and stuff. So, and then he kind of waxes poetic about the effects of doing this, and he says, "Do you like my lizard, by the way?" And so it kind of implies that like maybe that's what led him to this place, is that the cop took the lizard. And then we get kind of a connection back to the intro where this investigator named Roger Cliff went to that farm, where it's not really clear. We don't find out really what happened between those two people in the beginning, but this Roger Cliff is going there to investigate it, and he finds a red lizard. Like I mentioned, there was a panel showing the red and green lizard on the well. He finds the red lizard. At this point, the red lizard is still alive, and he's determined to bring it back. And care for it, but it ends up die. It ends up dying, but he pickles it and keeps it for himself. But then 10 days ago, it started talking to him, tells him to go get a package that's at West Pacific Station in one of the lockers there. And when he goes there, he finds this, as soon as he opens the package, there's like this striped black and white suit, or like more like a jumper kind of thing. And as soon as he sees this costume, it just like something crazy happens in his brain. He puts it on, and that's he becomes the Head, at that moment. So in the present, the Head is distracted from attacking the woman because he actually sees that green lizard come flying in the room, still in that like energy pulse. And Michael shows up at the cop's place, because he's been following this lizard and he doesn't really know why what he's doing exactly. It's just like acting on instinct. So the head turns around and actually grabs the woman, and Michael's just shocked into in action. He just stands there and watches, as the woman, like, he starts to attack the woman. It's a little unclear, like, for a couple seconds, like, what happens with the woman and what the head is doing. It seems like he's gonna kill, or you kind of expect that he would kill her, but he sort of like jumps out the window, and flies into the sky and just leaves the woman in the room with the dead cop and all the broken glass. And Michael's just standing there confused. But then he sees the lizard again on the windowsill and reaches out, tries to grab it and misses. And when he, in the process, ends up leaning out the window, he sees that masked figure that we've got some glimpses of. It's just kind of, it's either floating or maybe kind of standing, on like the window ledge across, the little alleyway there. Again, it's kind of shadowy. We just see the long hair and mask. Even though it's sunlight, he's kind of like in the alley shadow. But he's up above where Michael's at. And the lizard is just kind of like rotating in the air above his outstretched hand. When this figure moves, Michael goes chasing after it, tries to track him down, starts like starts shouting that he knows who the masked figure is. And earlier in the story, he talked about how he had dreams of this masked figure, and he remembered that when he was a kid too, that he had dreams about the same masked figure. But then the head reappears and goes to attack Michael. He comes like descending down from the sky, lands on Michael, and shoves that straw, like medical straw instrument type thing, into Michael's nose with like an explosion of blood, and that's where the issue ends. So it's very interesting. I did read the intro, which tells you a little bit more about the series. So, there's something going on. And I won't say all of what I learned from the intro, which isn't much more than I will say, which is that it kind of does connect back to stuff that from Michael, characters that Michael knows of, like from maybe from comic books or something like that. So there is kind of like a aspect to it that kind of relates to comics and has like a metafictional aspect to it, like these the masked figure and the head and stuff, and some other characters that are introduced later on, sounds like relate in some way to characters that Michael's already familiar with. But I thought this was really interesting, kind of
So
neat.
that was all issue one,
That
or?
was all just issue one.
Yeah.
It was kind of tough to
So you're gonna continue with the rest of it?
I might, yeah, because it's a limited series, I might actually check out the rest of it because I was pretty intrigued by it. Yeah, it's interesting. Kind of want to see where it goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say that if you're a fan of that early Vertigo style, it might be something to check out if if you haven't.
So I'm going to cover another DC comic. I'm going to cover a Scooby-Doo. I've been reading Scooby-Doos quite a bit lately. I've been trying to get the first appearance and pretty much giving up because it's just when I was going for a G, which is horribly conditioned, like usually I'm in the VG or higher range for over $500. I'm like, that's too much. Like it just, it's, I am flabbergasted by the cost of Scooby-Doo. Like who would have thought, you know, that a Scooby-Doo comic book, even if you're looking at like the first Scooby-Doo Archie or the first Scooby-Doo Marvel or the first Scooby-Doo DC or any of the incarnations, they're worth a lot.
Wow. What's the actual first appearance considered? Like, how old is that?
It's a gold key.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's that one's, I don't know why the demand. I got close. I got within the last underneath a minute. And crazily enough, I was like trying to get it for like 480. So I like went 480, but I was like, I'm so close that I'm gonna put my max bid at five. I can't remember what I did at like, I think I was like 501.99 or something like that. So I was like, I'm gonna put it at that. And then it stayed there, and I said, I'm gonna win it. But man, it's a little more than I wanted to pay, but I'm gonna win it. And I was watching the timer go down, and it was like 30 seconds. And then all of a sudden, bam, you know, I just like, I lost it. It went for like 5.11. But that was the first time I like really tried to win it. And unless I run across it, like, because you could still run across it, because a lot of people don't realize that Scooby-Doo is worth money.
Yeah, that might be
So,
the way it happens, is like not online,
yeah,
like
not online, but you just run across it at like an antique store or something, and it's there, and it's has a price on it, you know.
Yeah.
And unless I run into it like that, but I've been trying to track down the first Flintstones, the first Scooby-Doo, and the first Jetsons. And of all of them, the Jetsons is the cheapest, but and then Flintstones follows that, and then Scooby-Doo's at the top. But I'm going to be covering one of the DC Scooby-Doos. I've been reading them sort of in sequential order. And this is Scooby-Doo number 39. I love the cover for this because it has Shaggy like riding a BMX bike being chased by a headless biker, and Scooby-Doo's on his back and he says, "Ride, Raggy, ride." Like I'm trying my best to stay ahead, you know, Shaggy is. But this one is a lot of fun. This one is written by John Rosum, which I know from Milestone Comics. He wrote Zombie and a couple other ones. And Joe Staton, who I recognize more as a Green Lantern artist, and also he drew Millennium. So, you know, it's two creators that I know quite a bit. John Rosum does a really good job. Like when he dialogues something, he's like channeling the characters. Like when Shaggy talks, it's exactly like what Shaggy would say. And when Scooby talks, he's nailed it. But the Scooby gang is driving at night, and they run across the town of Yawning Gap, and they're having an annual bike racing championship. And Shaggy's saying, "You know, I used to be good at biking. I used to be a paper boy." And they say, "What happened?" "I discovered something way more important: food." And Scooby's like, "Ree-ree-ree-ree." Because Scooby loves it, and Shaggy and are like total buds. I love the relationship with Shaggy and Scoob because it's like they're just best friends, you know? And it reflects reality, I think, because a lot of our dogs are truly our best friends.
Yeah.
And
That's like what you want, right? That's,
yeah.
yeah.
They almost the mystery machine almost hits two kids on bikes, and they're running, and they're like, "Are you kids okay? What are you doing riding at night, driving in the middle of the road?" And they said, "We were practicing for the race, because if you win the race, you get a banquet and you win trophies and all this stuff." But we saw this ghost, the headless biker. So they started pedaling fast and almost got hit by the car. And they tell him the story of this ghost. And of course, the gang is like, "We solve mysteries. We're gonna go. We're gonna put Shaggy undercover as a biker because he knows how to bike." And they go to the contest, and there's some rich dad that looks like Alan Thicke. Like, I don't know how they are. Like, Joe Staten was watching one of the old, was it Alan Thicke in Growing Pains? Or,
Yeah, I think
yeah, I
so.
think it was in Growing Pains. I always get Growing Pains and Family Ties confused. I
Yeah.
know Family Ties was Michael J. Fox, but I don't remember the father. Oh, the
Yeah, the
father was a
f
bearded guy. He was a
Right,
bearded.
yeah, that's so, I can't
Yeah.
remember the actor's name, but yeah, he had a beard.
Yeah, so this guy looks like Alan Thicke, and he's there with his son, and he's the only one entering the contest. And he goes, "Well, now the guy says, "Now we can have a race at least, because you're the only two that are showing up." But then Brittany Bone shows up. She's a girl on a bike, and they're gonna race. No one wants to race. Even the I think Gage and Grammy, who were the two kids that were almost hit by the car, I think the Scooby Gang told them to stand down. Like, "We don't want you to get hurt. We're gonna go undercover and solve this." So they weren't even at the race. So it's just three bikers that are racing, and the gun fires, and they go off on the race. And that girl who's racing, you think she's the bad guy because she plays dirty. Like, she bumps Shaggy down the mount, like down a hill. Scooby's following, just Scooby's like running behind the bike, just following. And Shaggy like wiped out totally. The bike's like totaled. And Scooby says, "Shraggy, Rokay?" And he's like, "Scooby, is that you?" And he's like, "Rop on." So he's like, Scooby's right. He's riding on Scooby's back. And,
That's a pretty good Scooby
yeah.
impression.
I just love the way he talks. And then they run across the headless biker, and it chases them. And, the girl is about to knock the little kid off the bike when she gets hit by a tree branch, and then the kid, the Alan Thicke's kid, wins, and they crash, and they actually the headless biker runs into them, and they unmask the headless biker, and it's the father, it's Alan Thicke, right? He wants his son to win, and
Yeah.
the kid says, "You don't have any faith in me. I'm gonna try to win this on my own and start the bike race with everybody else." He asks Shaggy, "Do you want to join the race with us?" And Shaggy's like, "Count us out. Like, one race was more than enough for me. Re-two, like Scooby-Doo." So that's how it ends. Like, nobody goes to jail. I guess they just say the father, the rich father, is just an asshole in this. But then there's a second story. The second story is by Bob Fingerman and Eric Dosheer. And this one's called The Chocolatier Crotil. I can't pronounce this. Chortled. Do you know how to say that? Chortled. Chork. I don't know.
G, what is it? CHO
RTLED.
R chortled.
Yeah. What does
Yeah.
that mean?
I think it's like a kind of laugh.
Oh,
Like
okay. That makes sense, 'cause the villain does have
yeah,
a
like kind of like a
specific
chuckle,
laugh.
like a breathy chuckle.
Okay. I never heard that word before. They're in Pennsylvania's Dutch country. And I've actually been in this area because I went to Super Show with Keith, and that's where I met Daryl, I think, for the first time. But
Yeah, I've been there too, that area.
Yeah. And you go into Amish country where there's carts and horses and kind of poop all over the road and everything. And they're kind of in this area. And they see a Amish boy that has a broken wheel on his cart, and they go to help him. And he says, "What's with all the pollution in this area? You'd think with no, factories or anything." And so, well, there's a candy factory over there that's blowing all this pollution in the air. And he says, "Don't eat that though. That's awful candy. We have an Amish chocolate guy over here." And I like he tells, but the only the boy says, "But the only thing it produces more foul than the smoke is its bitter, inedible candy." And Scooby says, "Roid disappointing." he wanted the chocolate. And so they fix this kid's wagon and get him going, and they say, "Oh, there's a ghost." He calls, what does he call him? The chocolate drenched specter. And they're like, "Oh, we solve mysteries. Let's go figure out why this guy." So they go to this Amish guy's, and he say, "I'm going out of business. I put my family on a cart and sent them away because I'm worried for their lives because of this specter and this ghost." He said this ghost is Ezekiel, who he knows, and he fell into a vat of molten chocolate. And what was he? I think he was his late partner, and he's haunting the barn. And Shaggy and Scooba obviously go to the barn before they know the ghost is in there because there's a vat of chocolate they smell. And they get into the chocolate. I mean, this is so unsanitary, especially if Scooby's like just jumps into the tank of chocolate, like just his whole body, right? He doesn't care. And they're full of it. And this ghost pops out, and he's an Amish ghost. And he comes out and chases the gang. And they like follow the chocolate to find out where this guy's coming from. And something gives them away, like the way the clothes, the garments that this Amish ghost is wearing has like certain things that Amish would never wear. And so they know that something's going on. Well, it turns out it's the factory owner that owns the other chocolate company, that he wants to put him out of business and sell his own chocolates and steal the recipe. And that's how that one ends. But yeah, it was a fun ride. I've been reading several Scooby issues the last couple of weeks and enjoying them quite a bit.
That's cool. Definitely sounds like it evokes the feeling of the cartoon.
Yeah, it's I really like the way, especially the way Rosam writes it, because the Scooby dialogue is just the dialogue between Shag and Scooby. He must have some kind of love for those characters, because like you could just picture everything that Shag says, and then all of Scooby's responses is just spot on. I just love them together.
Yeah, that pair definitely makes a show. And I always enjoyed Shaggy's kind of hippie talk.
Yeah. It's so formulaic, but it's still fun. Like
Yeah,
it's
it's
not as fun
kind of
as
what you
the
go
flip.
there for.
Yeah, it's in terms of animated, like rewatching at my age now, it's not as fun as the Flintstones, 'cause the Flintstones to me is, well, I know it was in prime time, aired prime time, but its humor is to cater to a older audience, in my opinion. And the plots are all over the place. Like they constantly change, so they don't fall into the same formula pattern. But the magic behind Scooby-Doo is just, Shaggy and Scooby by far. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And I like the Jetsons for the same reason. It's catered to more of that kind of plot. It's just, instead of caveman, it's future. It's the same thing.
Yeah,
Same
basically.
formula that Flintstones had.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it is interesting to think about how that was on prime time. Like, you think of that as like a more modern phenomenon for there to be a cartoon on in prime time,
Yeah.
This is, interesting to think about how that was.
Well, I started a Flintstones rewatch and they're amazing. Like they are really, really solid. The only thing that shocked me is I never watched the Flintstones in order, like
Yeah.
because it would always appear in reruns by the
Same
time I
here.
started watching it. So you never know what episode you were getting, you know?
Yeah.
And when you watch it in order, you're like, wow, that theme song is so different. It sounds like they lifted a Looney Tunes theme song and put it on the Flintstones until like later seasons.
The original one wasn't
Yeah, the original one.
it wasn't the Meet the Flintstones.
No, it was more like a Looney Tunes theme. Not the main Looney Tunes theme, but like one that would always play
Just
in
something
the
that would
background. Yeah.
interesting.
Yeah.
Anything, is there anything else?
If you ever have HBO Max, you can put it on
Yeah,
and
we
just
do. I always kind of forget, like, since they
Scooby-Doo's on
incorporated
there.
that stuff, I always forget that that kind of stuff is on there, like the Warner
Yeah.
Brothers type stuff.
It's worth watching the opening scene just to see, like it's not probably not what you remembered.
No, yeah, I just remember
Yeah.
the Meet the Flintstones
Yeah.
deal.
Do 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 do. And then the Jetsons. I haven't started that one yet, but I know that theme song pretty well.
Yeah, definitely.
But they didn't even have the Yabba Dabba Doo, like Flintstones, Meet the Flintstones. It's a very unusual opening. But what else do you got?
I read also read the first issue of Scud, the Disposable Assassin.
Well, I know nothing about this.
Yeah, this was
I
also
am aware
something
of it.
yeah, same here. But this is actually was a collection published by Image. Trying to see if there's a copyright is when they republished it, but there's a little story actually in so it's all done pretty much by a guy named Rob Schrab, and he's known more as like a TV writer. He was like one of the main people on Sarah Silverman's show apparently, and has done like comedy writing for a bunch of other TV shows and stuff like that, and his wife actually wrote the foreword and talks about how he gave her a copy of the comic on their first date, and it was like 10 years old at that point. But it apparently worked, and she talks about how he originally made the comic when he was depressed after being dumped, and then he made like 20 issues over 5 years, and then after another breakup, he stopped making the comic, and it was like unfinished. And then like 10 years later, in 2006, Eric Stevenson from Image Comics contacted him about republishing the issues that he had done, and he decided it was time to finally finish up what he never finished, and what he produced another like 100-something pages. And she talks a little bit about like, how crazy it was like finishing it, because he was at that point like working on the Sarah Silverman show and squeezing it in before and after work and all day on the weekends and stuff like that, but finally finished it. So yeah, it definitely has like a like a independent, like one person doing everything kind of feel, at least to the first issue. Especially in the lettering, like you can tell it's like not a professional letterer doing the lettering. But it starts out with this little guy. He's like kind of a caricature. He like is in like a shirt and tie and pants, but his face is just like a big circle with only eyes and a mouth. And he's reporting into his boss, who's kind of got like a similar physiology, is in a suit, and but his head isn't, he's like in the shadow, and his head is just like a black circle with like all these teeth. And they've got some kind of like creature in their company, and they don't have the money to get rid of it, but the fact that they have this pest in their company is costing them money as well. So they're like, the boss is telling this guy, you need to get rid of it, or you're gonna have to go down and take care of the monster yourself if you don't do anything about it. So he goes out, and there's this like vending machine, and there's only one thing in the vending machine, and it's Scud, the disposable assassin. He's like a robot, and so he puts like three coins in, presses the button, and like the door opens, and this Scud steps out. So that's a neat concept. I definitely thought that was a cool concept, and just like this robot assassin in a vending machine, and it just comes out, ask him what the job is. He says, "Who's the job?" In other words, who I gotta kill. And the guy has a disc with all the information on what, who, you know, the, and a map of the factory and where the weapons are and all that stuff. And like Scud has a like a disc drive built into his one of the palms of his hands, so he takes it in like that, and then he goes off. And so like most of the issue is actually this long fight with Scud trying to take out this creature. So like for a couple pages he's tracking the creature down. There's like these bloody handprints on the ground. He finds this like totally mangled corpse, and he encounters the creature. He shoots it a couple times, and he thinks that he killed it. One thing I'll say is this creature, it's almost like he, like maybe he was like almost too ambitious for his good in creating this creature. It's such a bizarre, strange, weird creature that like it's kind of hard to tell what it is at times. It's seems to be some kind of like squid that's belted to another body, like an anthropomorphic body, but that body has like a three prong electrical plug as a head and rat like mouse traps for hands, and its knees have mouths on them, so it's like talks through these mouths on its knees. It's just like really, really weird. And it, for whatever reason, it's only dialogue through the issues, stuff like quoted from movies and stuff. So it attacks and is like bashing this wall behind Scud and like leaving electrical plug imprints on the wall, snapping its mousetrap hands at him, and Scud keeps shooting it with weapons and stuff, and the squid on the monster's stomach shoots like ink at him, like octopus, like an octopus or whatever, covers his face, and he's blinded for a little bit and has to wipe it off. And so he has to go find it again. And he comes across some eggs, and he's kind of like reacts to that. It's not clear what his reaction is. Like he's concerned maybe that it's a mother now, or if he's like just like exacerbated or what. He keeps chasing after it. And the monster's saying stuff like, "And the cow says moo." You didn't put me on a pedestal, so I'm laying you out on a slab. A lot of these quote, I think they're quotes, I don't recognize all of them. There's a couple that are like more obvious than others. So they keep fighting, and fighting and fighting. And at one point, Scud like shoots off one of its arms, and so it runs away. Wait till they get a load of me, it says. That's one that's a little more obvious. So Scud goes in the bathroom to clean more of the ink off of his face, or he gets inked again. And he notices something's like stuck to his back or clipped to his back. And this was kind of like the twist that I liked the most out of the story was he sees that on his back is this note that says attention, Scud, disposable robot assassin, Heartbreaker series 1373. This unit will self-destruct upon termination of target. So I thought it was like, and he's like, oh no. And, so I thought it was cool that he gave him kind of like self-preservation instinct that like adds like, I think like an interesting wrinkle to what was just kind of like a lot of fighting at that point. So now he's got like a problem to sort of figure out. So he ends up fighting some more, but he's thinking about if I kill this, creature, like I'm going to self-destruct. So he starts shooting. The limbs off of the creature over a couple pages, he shoots off each limb. But then once it's kind of like incapacitated, he goes to the payphone, calls emergency. And so they, I guess this, hospital is equipped to deal with like strange monsters because, they're there and, they've got the monster on life support and he says like, you know, we can provide life support for a month, but after that, you're going to have to pay, or he'll, you know, or we'll run off of funds. We'll have to take him off of life support. So that I also thought was another, clever plot point where now he's stuck having to take jobs and make money, to keep this thing on life support so that it doesn't die so that he, doesn't self-destruct. So, all in all, I thought it was like, you know, like the art was a little rough at times. The lettering
is it black and white?
Yeah, it's black and white. Yeah. The lettering was a little rough at times, but, I did like the concept and the setup. Like there was a little, maybe too much, like it's a lot kind of drawn out over one issue, like the fight goes on for a bit too long at times, but like it also means that it's not like a long read, so I liked the actual plot twists for the setup, presumably for like the series. So yeah, it was interesting, something I'd never heard of. I think this looks like this collection might have came out in 2018, perhaps.
Yeah.
And they ultimately did a total of 24 issues. So they ended up doing a few more issues to finish it up.
Yeah, I was aware of it just through magazines like Wizard. Like I knew it existed. I just never poked at it.
Yeah.
That one in Flaming Carrot, like two ridiculous looking designs that I just never was appealed to it, you know?
Yeah.
I never, yeah.
I forgot about Flaming Carrot, but that's like, that's a good kind of comparison.
Yeah. The only Flaming Carrot stuff I own, I think, is because it crossed over with the Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I only have a couple of things, but Scud, I don't think I have anything of that character other than what appeared in Wizard. So I'm like aware of a lot of stuff. I just, there's certain areas I haven't poked in for sure.
Yeah. Same here. And it's kind of unusual where I might've come across Scud at some point. And forgot about it. Just like, I know I've looked up Peter Milligan, like when I've read other stuff of him, I know I've looked at his Wikipedia page before, but for whatever reason, I just kind of glossed over Enigma, or it wasn't available easily or something, and
Yeah.
just I totally forgot about it. So I was kind of looking for stuff like that where I either didn't know about it or just totally forgot it existed.
Yeah, I don't think I own Enigma. Oh, I do own it. I haven't read it for sure. There's no way in hell. Yeah, it's what, four, five, six, eight issues.
Yeah.
So I do own it. I'm surprised I own it. 1993. I'm surprised I own it. 1993 was the year I graduated college, so yeah, I'm kind of surprised I own it. But he was a founding father kind of Vertigo because he had Shade the Changing Man. That was pretty early on. But yeah, so my last I'm gonna talk about two movies really quick. Two I haven't seen before, James Bond films. So I think I only have watched like which people are gonna be, oh my God, you don't watch James Bond. But I've only seen like four James Bond movies because to tell you the truth, I'm not really into the spy genre. And I started reading the comics and enjoying them just fine. But that doesn't mean I'm not in the spy genre now. Like I think when the movies were coming out, I didn't care about the spy genre. And now I'm like a little more interested in it. With Kingsman, The Kingsman, and all kinds of other movies that I've seen since. So I just decided to watch View to a Kill. It has a great Duran Duran song. I thought, what the hell? Christopher Walken's in it, and he's been in a lot of commercials lately where people are pretending to have his accent. And I always liked Christopher Walken. A matter of fact, he used to have the opening to Geek Brunch was The Cowbell by Christopher Walken from Saturday Night Live when Heath was doing the show. Yeah, we need more cowbell. But he's the villain in it. It has Grace Slick. And it had who was the main female? It was not Jane Seymour, that's the next one. Tanya Roberts. So the plot of this one's kind of unusual is they understand that Christopher Walken's running like a horse racing ring where he has a breed of horse that's just beating everything, and they're like, but he's testing negative for drugs. So there's this older guy that does kind of experiments on horses that's from the Nazi. He was a former Nazi scientist that's injecting these horses with certain things that undetectable technology, and they're winning all kinds of races. So it's making Max Zorin or Zorin Industries very wealthy. Grace Slick is kind of like his bodyguard sexual plaything, Christopher Walken's sexual plaything. And Roger Moore is supposed to go undercover to break this plan out, but the plan actually gets bigger than just horses because it involves them drilling an oil rig and getting silicon out of the ocean to make chips, like these chips. And they want to take out Silicon Valley. So the main thrust of Christopher Walken's trying to destroy or sink Silicon Valley into the ocean, essentially, so he can own or drive the silicon market himself. That's the main theme, and James Bond has to go undercover, uncover this. There's even scenes where I always count the women he sleeps with, and it's almost like, on average, it's like three per per movie. Usually opens up with him in the sack with somebody or sleeping with a spy. Most of the time, he sleeps with at least one or two villains, like people that are against him. In this case, he slept with Grace Jones, who plays Mayday, who really wants to kill him until the end. When Mayday realizes what Christopher Walken's really doing, she teams with Roger Moore and kind of does an ultimate sacrifice so the bomb doesn't go off and destroy Silicon Valley. And then Tanya Roberts is sort of somebody that Christopher Walken's trying to buy out because her father used to own the oil company, but she knows that he's bad news and is trying to get him for pollution and all kinds of other stuff, but she can never nail him. But Christopher Walken gets her fired from her job, gets them wanted by the police for murder of somebody that was working for him, but they make it look like murder. But in the end, everybody wins. You get a good song. I really love the James Bond silhouette openings with the songs, like where you don't really see the actors, but you see like silhouettes of them. Like you'll see like rough images of faces and stuff, but it's mostly in silhouette and there's guns and crazy stuff happening. And I just love the openings.
Yeah, some of those still really hold up. Some of those songs still really
Yeah, this
good.
View to a Kill is really good. And the next one is a big song too, Paul McCartney's Live and Let Die.
Oh yeah, that's a great opening.
That one was this could be my favorite James Bond movie of the few I've seen. It has sort of a ridiculous plot. Like it involves voodoo and stuff, like, and it has like campiness to it. There's some really campy stuff. Like Live and Let Die stars Roger Moore, Yaphet Kotto. Like I've seen him in a lot of things. But I couldn't name any of them. Jane Seymour is the one that reads the tarot cards. She's beautiful in this. She's very young in this. Clifton James plays like a goofy ass Sheriff Pepper, kind of like Smokey and the Bandit. You know, Gleason, Jackie Gleason plays. It like makes the portions of the movie when Clifton James shows up as Sheriff Pepper, like comedic, which is very weird in the movie, but I guess they chose to do that. I learned that Moneypenny, Lois Maxwell's like, you see her fairly young in this movie 'cause it's the first Roger Moore film, and then you see her in View to a Kill and she's a lot older. But yeah, that it's kind of interesting to see how some of the actors are still going on with the films. And Moneypenny is like a secretary type character for the British Secret Service. But this one opens up with there's a spy and he's watching. It's a 00 agent. He's watching a ceremony in New Orleans, kind of like where they're marching down really slow, paying the horns, and people are saddened and stuff because they're going to bury somebody and they're carrying a casket. Well, in this case, some guy comes right next to this spy because he's like watching this restaurant, and he essentially pokes him with something, and he goes, "Well, whose funeral is it?" And he goes, "It's yours." And when they get by, they throw that guy on the floor, they put the casket on top of him, and then take him, the spy, out. And so he's like inside the casket, and later on they do voodoo stuff with him and have him bit in the face with the actual like poisonous snake with the voodoo priest. But it still has like a sensibility to it that voodoo could actually exist. Because they have a character that plays Papa or Baron Samedi, so that's a voodoo priest that's known throughout history, and Also, you see it in Shadow Man, the comic book, a lot and stuff like that. But he's one of the characters that's in it. There's another character called Teehee, and he's got like this mechanical arm contraption that works for Kanaga. Well, Kanaga runs a poppy seed drug opium type thing, but he's involved in the voodoo world and suppresses the people so they actually believe things. And Solitaire is actually a legitimate tarot card reader. Like, what she predicts is true. And you find out that her mother had the same ability, and when she got pregnant or had sex for the first time, she lost her ability. So, like, Jane Seymour can't have sex. Well, guess what happens? Roger Moore has sex with her, right? So she loses her ability. Kanaga loses faith in her. But
Oh, yeah.
yeah, James Bond has, they have some really good scenes in here. And I've always been into like the voodoo type stuff, like just fascinated with it. And this sort of fit into that realm. And James Bond saves Jane Seymour because he's gonna kill her later on. Oh, there's a crazy alligator scene I want to talk about. So Teehee puts James Bond on this little patch of dirt surrounded by water, and essentially starts feeding these alligators and crocs. There's both of them. He actually explains to James Bond the difference between alligators and crocs, and he starts feeding them, and they're all heading towards that little patch of land that the James Bond is in. There's a lot of them. Like, there's a lot of alligators. And he leaves him with some chicken or whatever they're feeding the alligators. So he tries to like draw him off, but it doesn't work. But then he does like a video game thing, and I think this is a video game thing in like in Pitfall. Like, if you go back to the Atari 2600, I think there's a scene where you have to like jump on alligator heads like to get across a puddle. That's what James Bond does. He goes boom, 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 boom all the way across and gets out. But it's pretty crazy because that was like a death trap. And then he has to go save Jane Seymour, who was a bad guy, but now she's kind of turned because she's gonna die because they're gonna kill her because she lost her sight. And she's essentially trapped to a pole, and they're doing this whole voodoo thing with the snake, like they're gonna bite her in the face. And James Bond is there, and he set up some bobs in the poppy field, so he like blows up those things, and then he goes to rescue her, and then Papa Baron Samedi shows up, right? And James Bond just pulls out one of his long guns, and just boom, blows it up, and you see it. It's like a It's just a robot, like it's a face. But then later on, a real Baron Samedi pops up, and they get in this big old fight scene, and he kicks him into a casket of poisonous snakes, and it closes. But at the end of the movie, when you think, they actually kill Kanaga. They have like a capsule that'll just release all this like helium into your body and stuff and blow you up. They blow up Kanaga, but Teehee later on the train attacks Jane Seymour and Roger Moore as they're about to have sex, and he James Bond fights him and actually kills Teehee. But then at the end of the they're shooting the train at the end when they're like getting ready to get nasty, and at the end you see Baron Samedi on the back of the train laughing, and it's really creepy because he like sort of died twice in the movie, so it's like, does this guy really exist? It's like crazy. It was a great movie. I love this movie, and I like how like they incorporate view to Live and Let Die song, not just in the Paul McCartney way, but they do like instrumentals of Live and Let Die throughout the movie. And then when he goes undercover to go into that restaurant bar, he sits at a table and a woman comes out like and sings "Live and Let Die." So like they incorporate the song like multiple times throughout the movie. It's really a great movie.
Yeah, you really kind of brought it back for me, 'cause I watched, oh, how long ago? Like between 15, probably over 15 or more years ago, I went for over a long period, started watching the Bond films from the beginning.
Yeah.
It was definitely interesting going from Sean Connery to Roger Moore. It was definitely a different feel to the Roger Moore films, and it was the 80s and stuff, so they got pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think I didn't finish, I didn't go all the way through. I don't think I finished Roger Moore. I think maybe one of the last few Roger Moores I didn't end up watching. But I did watch those two. And yeah, so you kind of brought those back to my memory.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely watch as many Roger Moore ones as I can. I don't have any Sean Connery ones under my belt. I think I've seen three of the four. Is his name Daniel Craig?
Yeah.
Daniel Craig films. I've seen three of the four. None of them I've seen at the theater. I've just seen like on the movie channels. But
Yeah.
I may have seen. There were two Bonds in between. There was Remington Steele Guy and
Pierce Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan and one other one.
And
Timothy Dalton.
yeah, I'll say I was picturing his face,
Yeah, Barb made the save on that one.
but
I may have seen one of their films, but I don't remember anything about it. So
yeah, I know I saw some of the Pierce Brosnan ones. I know I remember one of them in particular. There was one that was gold, not gold,
Goldfinger.
what was it? The one that was, I have another brain fart. The one that
Never
was,
Let Live or something like that. There's
the
one.
one that was made into the Nintendo 64 video game. That's GoldenEye. Yeah. I
GoldenEye.
had the gold part.
That was a big Nintendo 64 game. That was a huge
Yeah.
hit. That was a huge hit. I remember, I never owned it, but I remember friends and stuff saying that was like the best game ever. Like they just loved it.
I was like, my first year of college, my roommate had a Nintendo 64, and there was like six or so of us that would like trade off playing the four player. So that kind of cement, like the characters in that are from that movie, so that's really cemented that movie in my brain.
Yeah.
But that's cool. Yeah, I had just one last real quick thing.
Sure.
This is kind of like the other ones, but not. I was thinking about, for some reason, I saw something that made me think about the fact that Alan Moore did stuff for Wildstorm. And I've read a lot of Alan Moore stuff, but I haven't read any of that stuff. And I was looking to see if anything was on Hoopla, and I wasn't really able to find much, except for that DC Universe by Alan Moore trade.
Yeah.
I had already read the other two things, so I decided to just read. So they have the Voodoo miniseries that he did, and the I think it was Deathblow miniseries.
Yeah.
They have those in there, but I didn't really want to start another series, so I just. They have like an 8-page story. The very last thing that's in the trade is an 8-page story that he did for Wildcats number 50 called Reincarnation. And it was kind of, I was like, well, if they're putting it in here, then it should be understandable by somebody that hasn't read his other his Wildcats run. But it's not really the case. I mean, you understand what's going on, but I don't think you get I think the impact of it is meant for somebody that has read. It's called Reincarnation, and it shows Grifter bringing in like three former Wildcats members as like the possibility of creating a like Wildcats reserve group. And it's Majestic, who I've seen like
It's like the
his,
Superman character.
yeah, I've seen his comics. I've seen these characters, but didn't really like, I knew who Majestic was because he had his own title, but then Lady, what's her name? Lady something. She's like,
One with that's mechanical.
yeah.
Oh, God, I can't think of her name. Lady
They do
Tron.
Lady
Lady
Tron.
Tron.
Yeah, they do say her name. And then the other one, they actually don't ever say her like code name. She's by her regular name the whole time, Kanisha. So I had to like look her up on online. And it's like she's the daughter of one of the original Wildcats. Let me find
Zealot?
the, yeah, she's like
Hoodoo?
Zealot's daughter.
Void? Yeah, it's got to be one of them.
She's called Savant.
Ah.
So, and the framing device is that Savant Kanisha, she's received a letter from somebody, and who seems to be aware of like this meeting that they had, and then the bulk of the story is just this meeting that they had, and it's definitely got like the Alan Moore like flair for dialogue, where there's like a page that is pretty like four panels that are pretty static, where the three potential reserve members are like talking and arguing about like when they were on the team, and like one of them like tried to get a date with the monster they were fighting while they were fighting them, and this villain Tao, Tao, turns one of them into an atomic bomb, and another one slept with somebody, and so they're just arguing. But in the mean, and then the foreground on the right side of the, on the left side of the panel, I didn't even notice this at first, but like Grifter's just leaning against something in the first two panels, he's just doing that, and then like the panel behind him is starting to move, and he turns his head to look at it, and then like the final panel, he's being like absorbed by this like liquid metal. So it's nice, nice layout. I'm sure, like knowing Alan Moore, he directed all of that, and knowing how descriptive his scripts tend to
It's
be.
crazy thinking that Alan Moore did stuff for Wildstorm and Extreme, you know,
Yeah,
and
that's why I'm
Awesome.
still kind of like, I
It's
still have
like
this like,
it's kind of mind blowing just because of the mentalities of the two. Do you know what I mean?
yeah.
Like, he's totally a writer-driven guy, and these guys are art-driven.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why there, it's always kind of intrigued me, and I never have gotten around to checking out of any of it, but so yeah, so then they finally notice that Grifter's been like attacked by the building basically, and that they're in, that's come to life, and that takes the shape of Maul, Maul, one of the
Yeah,
original
he's
Wildcats.
the hulking one. Yeah.
Yeah, for some reason. But then so they have to basically fight the building coming alive and trying to figure out what's going on, and like Majestic disappears for like a really short period of time, but long enough for them to notice, and he comes back, and in that short period of time he built a molecular disentangler, you know, so he's kind of like, he's like Superman, you know, like you said, he's just like, his power levels are like out of control, and he's like I was gone as long as I was, which was again like only like seconds, because he like had an original design that he had to scrap and start over again. And they're like, get on with it, and he's like, well, I don't think anyone's ever invented one of these before, so I think I deserve more respect. He's kind of like Superman with like a bad attitude.
I
And
think Alan Moore loves to play with those types of characters
it does seem
because
like it, yeah.
he concentrated on Supreme
Supreme,
in the
yeah.
other one, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what he did, whatever happened to Superman, you know, which he was playing with towards pre-crisis, so.
Yeah, which I think that, like, that's definitely in this collection too. So yeah, I mean, they basically, they take care of that. But they, like, they figure out it's somebody called Mr. White. That's like an alien shapeshifter that they dealt with before, and they're like, how's he here? How's he fused with the building? And they kind of discuss some stuff that relates back to the run, and like the last page is her finishing this letter. And to her, it's like surprising that like she realizes who the letter's from. She's wearing glasses, but the last panel is her glasses on the ground, like broken, and she's dropped the letter. And I was like, I don't, who is this supposed to have been from? Like, I don't understand. So I had to go online and to understand that it was, it to someone who read the run would be clear apparently that it was from this villain, Tau, and this which stands for Tactical Augmented Organism. And I guess he was a big villain in Wildstorm. He was created by Alan Moore and Travis Charest, who's the artist on this story too, was the artist on that run, and was their like big bad. And I guess this reveals that like up to this story he was thought to have been dead, so that was kind of like the surprise here, I guess, that he was still alive. But I didn't understand that from just reading it without reading the original stuff, but which is fine. I thought maybe because it was included in this collection, because it finishes off the collection, that maybe it would be, you know, something that you could read without knowing the background, but it doesn't seem like it is really.
Yeah, but at least you can Google
Yeah,
and kind of
exactly.
fill in the holes while you're
Yeah,
lost.
figured it out anyway.
Yeah.
But
Well, that's pretty much all I had.
yeah.
So yeah, it's cool you brought the Wildcats. I'm still trying to complete. I have the complete run of the first volume, but I need to fill in some of the other volumes just to complete that.
Yeah, it still would be interesting, I think, at some point to check out the actual like Alan Moore's run on that.
Yeah.
I
You
guess
know
that's one
what?
thing from reading this, even though it's like out of order, it did make me
Yeah.
think like, oh, it might be intriguing.
You know, one thing I found odd, we went to the mall for the first time in at least two years. And I had noticed a trend when we went 2 years ago, because that's where they had a comic toy convention inside the mall. And they've done a lot like to destroy a lot of the mall because the big chains are going away, like
Yeah.
Sears and JCPenney. And there was like a Coat Outlet Burlington there, and they're all gone. But you know, you still have your Spencers and your Hot Topic and some shoe places, but it seems like there's about eight collectible, maybe nine if you include trains. There's like
Yeah.
a whole store dedicated just to trains, like, you know, toy trains. And I was like, wow, I couldn't believe the square footage on there. It's like, how do they afford this? Like, there's only like two people in the store. Like, how do they do
Yeah.
that? But there's a comic store there now that there's a 80s collectibles in there, which is very interesting because it's like all Ninja Turtles, G.I. Joe, any 80s properties, RoboCop. They have Star Wars, all kinds of stuff. I actually bought like an old Heroes World catalog there because they had some comics there in stock. They have unusual stuff there too. Like, I need to complete my RoboCop Avatar run, which is written by Frank Miller. Well, it's based on a movie plot by Frank Miller, but it's not Frank Miller.
Yeah.
So they like took the script for like RoboCop, like he did RoboCop 2 and 3, I think. And they took the script for the next one and they sort of adapted it at Avatar, which is unusual. But they had
Yeah.
some of those, and I was like, wow, I gotta, if I had my list with me, I have a list, but the way my database works, it's on my phone, but I haven't taken a recent snapshot. And I just picked up the Avatar run of Frank Miller stuff. But I bought the Heroes World catalog because I used, this is a catalog in the 80s that I used to circle with my parents. Like my parents never wanted to order, they wanted to order from the Sears catalog. They were, because Sears was physically there and they didn't
Yeah.
want to do things through the mail. But there was one Christmas that I actually circled things in this Heroes World catalog, and I got a lot of Mego dolls. Like me and my
Wow.
brother got like all the Mego dolls out of there. I got like five Mego dolls, and they were obscure ones like Thor, Falcon. You know, my brother had like Mr. and Mrs. Fantastic and the Torch, and it was like non Spider-Man, Hulk. You know, there were some characters. I had Green Arrow, and I got the Arrow car. And they ordered it, I know, because you couldn't find these things at Sears. You had to order them from like Heroes World. But I found the catalog. I found one of them anyway, and I bought it. It was pretty cool. But it's interesting how the mall has changed. They've taken most of the mall property and turned it to apartments. But a lot of the mall exists. The only chains of big stores that are left are Dillard's and Macy's, and I know Macy's is going away soon
Yeah.
because they're consolidating their stores. They're closing like 100+ stores in the next year. So yeah, it's kind of interesting how the mall has changed. But there's still a Dick's Sporting Goods, which is a big sporting good chain.
Yeah, it's kind of like that in our area. We have one mall that's more of like a mega mall that is really thriving, which that seems like the ones that are still around.
Yeah.
But the ones that are like the old school malls from the 80s, those are all like the same way that you're describing. Like they must have lowered the rent so low that, yeah, like it's they're filling the spaces with like stores like you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
But
unusual. 'Cause
yeah.
there was like, I think I counted five or six just toy collecting places. And there was a game store like with board games. Like it was very unusual. Like I don't know too many people that buy board games, and every time we go by that gaming store, we always stop by because we want to see what monopolies they have. Like they had a Curb Your Enthusiasm monopoly, but we never really buy much in there, or if anything, you know. But it's like, how do you guys exist when, like some of the stores just kind of blow my mind. Whereas the 80s store, they had a bunch of people in there like buying G.I. Joes and stuff. Like it seemed like they always had like one person in there while we were there at the register buying something. I was flabbergasted at the cost of all the toys. They were pretty much doing the old Star Wars toys, which I was telling Barb, you have all these in the basement. They're all $100 a piece. And they're in way better condition than they are here, I told her. You know, you have the box and the ship and the stickers for most things. I said the only thing that's beat up is my Millennium Falcon. But yeah, that's crazy. But that's all I had. So
Cool. Well, it's good talking to you.
missing Rob and Joe as they were doing family things.
Yeah, sounds
So
like it.
Rob's celebrating the birthday of his children.
Yeah.
Yeah. Twins. So,
So, one birthday for two people.
yeah. But it's got to be a bigger celebration, I bet.
Yeah.
This has been Geek Brunch Retro. You can find us at geekbrunchpodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook at Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button. You can follow most of us on X at Mike Myers Brunch, at Iowa's Joe and at Rob Krieger. And I think that's about it. We'll be back hopefully in 2 weeks if I can get the crew together. But we'll see you guys, and thanks for joining me, Chris. I'm glad you were able to make it.
Yeah, me too. Good
About
talking to
some
you.
obscure titles to the about two things that I haven't read. So there you go.
Yeah, all these years later, I still managed to do that somehow.
Yeah, it's almost like you concentrate. What could I do?
Yeah, there's no way of knowing, so I'm always surprised too.
Yeah. I have Enigma, but I can guarantee you I didn't read it. I'm 100% positive because
Yeah.
you were describing it, and I was on my database at the time looking at the description, not realizing I had it, but reading about it. And I'm like, man, this doesn't sound familiar at all. Like, there's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way I could have read something this weird and
Right.
not remembered it.
Yeah.
Because it involves like a comic book. Like, it's so weird. You know,
Yeah.
as a kid, he's reading a comic book and it comes reality kind of thing. It's bizarre.
Yeah. Cool.
Did his wife cheat on him?
Whose?
The main character in Enigma.
Oh, I don't know. Not in the first issue.
Okay.
I don't know if she does later on. And I think, I don't know. I think she might just be his girlfriend. I'm not sure,
Oh,
though.
okay.
Girlfriend or wife. But yeah, no, not in the first issue, anyway. But.
So it's just sex on Tuesdays.
Yep. And
Yep.
this time on the hood of a car, not
Yeah.
the engine, just the
Oh,
hood.
just to remind you, I'm gonna need the copy of the recording.
Yep, yeah, no
So at
problem.
your earliest convenience, just send it to me.
All right, sounds good. I'll send it to you soon
I
so I don't
have
forget.
pieces of it, but for some reason my Skype recorder does not like coming up with Skype already up. Yeah.
Yeah, I always open it first, because maybe I ran into that too. I don't know where I got that habit, but.
Yeah.
So. All right, yeah, I'll send it to you
All
soon
right.
so I don't forget.
Okay.
All
I'll talk
right.
to you soon.
Yep, have
Bye.
a good day. Bye.